Hello, hello, hello out there in podcast land. You have landed at Johnny Has the Keys, where we discuss horror and science fiction favorites of the past, present, and future. And I am here now with my good friend, David Horton. Hello, David.
Hello, Tim.
How's it been going? What's going on?
Good.
In your genre-related week?
My genre-related week. Let me see. Well, my big thing to start off this week is I got J. Michael Straczynski's autobiography. It's called Becoming Superman. And Straczynski is one of my favorite writers because he wrote, people who listen to the podcast know this. He wrote and created Babylon 5, and he wrote Sense8 with the Wachowskis, and he's done comic books, he's done novels, he's done radio, he's done plays, so he's a prolific writer, really, really good. I like his stuff, and he finally decided to tackle an autobiography, and it is just crazy.
It must be really good, because I think you may have talked about it last episode.
I may have. I may have, because I really love it.
That's fine.
It's just been really good.
Yeah, because I mentioned that wasn't he the writer from Sense8 that palled with Chowski? Yeah, we talked about this before we did our last episode. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's been my thing this week, is just finishing up that book and finally getting to the end of it.
So you are deep in that book.
I'm done with it now.
Okay.
So anybody who wants to borrow it, just let me know.
Write a review and you can borrow David's book. He'll even sign it for you.
There you go. There you go. What about you? What have you been doing?
Well, I've kind of been I'm a member of various streaming services, including Hulu and Amazon and Netflix and Shudder, of course, which would be a natural fit for me. But I'm starting to realize that Amazon has a lot of really cool stuff out there. And I watched, actually this one was not on Amazon. Amazon has a lot of good documentaries. This particular documentary was actually on Shudder, and it's called Smoke and Mirrors. And it's about Tom Savini and his life in movies and special effects and stuntman. I mean, he's done everything. He's directed, he's acted, he was a stuntman, and mostly he's known for makeup.
Yep.
But the thing, and this is going to be extremely appropriate considering our subject matter today, that he incorporated into his special effects was magic. He was always saying, instead of, what if we put this in and did it this way? He was like, but what if we took it out? How would it look that way and then film it backwards? And then all of a sudden, it looked like a machete just went into a guy's face. That kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, and it talks about his early life, how he, went to Vietnam. He was a photographer. He saw a lot of carnage, and that inspired him to turn it into an art form. It's not all, roses and perfume or whatever. He's had his depression and what is it, PTSD or whatever that a lot of Vietnam soldiers had. But, he started working with Romero. He got the Friday the 13th gig, and those special effects and creative ways of murdering people just, shot him into the stratosphere for a while. And then later, he ended up directing the remake of Night of the Living Dead, one that I know you're not that much of a fan of, but when I watched this documentary, I was kind of blown away because they were kind of leashing him because it was his first film, and I think they may have even shown some storyboards, but he talked about what they wanted to do, and what they wanted to do would have been really, really good. As far as updating that movie in particular.
Okay.
So if you're a Tom Savini fan, I highly recommend this. I mean, it even goes through his relationship with Robert Rodriguez and Tarantino and the latter films, like From Dusk Till Dawn. And wasn't he in that Grindhouse movie, too? I think he was, that Tarantino and Rodriguez did.
I think so.
Yeah. So Really cool stuff. And did I ever tell you that I ran into him at Disney World?
No,
yeah,
you did not.
I was coming out of a bathroom at the very beginning of the park, right there before you get on Main Street. And he was out there on a cell phone. And I was like, do I stand here and wait for him to get off the phone? And I thought, I've got to. So I stood there for a while, and he kind of noticed me. And I was like, I am being such a jerk. I'm just going to say, hey, you know, love your work or whatever. I can't remember what I did. And he thanked me and then got back on his phone. Because obviously he was talking to somebody and I just didn't want to interrupt him. But yeah, I mean, when you see Tom Savini, it's a pretty recognizable face. So, yeah.
That's wild. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool.
So, and on this documentary, he's at Disney World a lot. So he must like it. And he lives on the East Coast, so he goes to Disney World and not Disneyland. He still lives in Pittsburgh. He's always had a house there.
So, mm-hmm. Anyway. Understood.
Listen to me ramble like a fanboy. Imagine that.
No, that's good.
A fanboy with a podcast?
Imagine that. What? Never.
So anyway, let's move on to our other smoke and mirrors subject for the day. What are we discussing? Mm-hmm. This is more along your realm, I do believe.
It is, although it'll be interesting for us because it's, you know, there's a debate about that, about is this science fiction or is it not sort of thing, this particular film. But anyway, we are going to be doing Christopher Nolan's The Prestige, which came out in 2006. It stars Christian Bale, Hugh Jackman, Scarlett Johansson. It was written by the brothers, so Jonathan Nolan and his brother Christopher Nolan, who is my favorite because of Westworld and several other things, but they wrote it together, and then Jonathan, and then Christopher directed it. I mean, Christopher directed it. Jonathan's my favorite writer, so correct that. But basically, the story follows two rival magicians. It's a turn of the century, so end of the 19th century, when magic was actually in its kind of heyday as far as performance goes. I mean, magicians would get entire theaters and book them for, you know, months at a time and do shows every day sort of thing. And everybody was entranced by magic. And it's about two rival magicians who, through tragedies, try to one-up themselves all the way through. It has a lot of twists and turns to it. It does, I would classify it as science fiction just because a science fiction element becomes so important to the story. And it ends in a tragedy for one of the characters and not for the other, sort of, but still a tragic ending and lots of twists and turns, which is, so, you know, endemic of anything the Nolans do. They like to have twists in all of their storytelling. What did you think of it? Had you seen this movie before we started doing it for the podcast?
I had. I had forgotten it, though. So I must have saw it when it first came out. And because I actually own a copy of it. And I found it. And I was like, okay, I need to watch this again. And then when I watched it, I was like, oh, I didn't realize this was a Nolan movie. And I was like, no wonder David picked it, because I know how much he likes their collaboration on Westworld.
Yes.
And then I started thinking, well, it's got Christian Bale and Michael Caine. So that's half the cast of Batman right there, which made sense. And I was like, so then I started, you know, diving and saying, well, which came first and, you know, what was going on? So, yeah, I did a little bit of a diving into it. I do like the film, and I think it fits fine with our motif of sci-fi horror, because there is a science fiction element to it, but it's also got a really cool, I don't know, fantasy, almost Victorian era steampunk feel to it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, the time frame. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, with that science that science fiction element, and combined with the Victorian era, I'll just always think of like a steampunk type
of course,
story.
Yeah. Well, and it also has, you know, horrific elements to it too, mm-hmm. you know, especially in the last, like, you know, 20 minutes or so, there's a lot of, during all the reveals, mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot of, or literally prestige, if you want to talk about it. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of like stuff, and you have to cringe watching it, it's like, oh my gosh, are you suddenly realize you're in shock with the extent that these people have done what they've done.
Right.
Sort of thing. So, and I guess story-wise, so if we wanted to just go through the story, those of you who haven't seen it, go stop right now, go watch it, come back, because it's spoiler time.
Yeah, there's a lot of spoilers in this movie, too.
The whole movie itself is based around the three acts that it talks about in the very opening prologue, which is any magic trick has three acts to it, essentially. You have the pledge, which is showing the audience something that they know, understand, respect. You can even inspect it if you want to, that sort of thing, showing them an object. The turn, which is actually the trick of doing something with that object, whether it's make it disappear, cut a woman in half, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then the prestige, which is the reveal out of it, which is really the surprise element. Because like Michael Caine's character says at the very beginning, you can always make something disappear, but making it reappear is the real trick. And so these two magicians are working with Michael Caine's character, who is an essential. What did they? He actually pronounced it really weird in the beginning monologue. It was ingénieur or something, but he's an engineer. He designs magic tricks.
He's got a weird accent. And
yeah. Well, I love all the accents in this too, though. They're all really good. Mm-hmm. Even Scarlett Johansson's is a really good British accent. But
Bowie's too. Bowie kind of blew me away. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But essentially, Hugh Jackman's character, who is Angier, is more wealthy, more upper crust, that sort of thing. And his magic tends to, you know, go to the upper echelon of society at the time. Whereas Borden, who is Christian Bale's character, his magic is very straightforward, almost comic. He has a lot. He appeals to the lower class sort of thing. Each of them, through the course of the movie, it's gradually revealed, because the movie, again, like I said, is done the same way that a magic trick is done. The first, like, third of the movie is the pledge of seeing both of these magicians, seeing how they do what they do and how determined they are to become the best. And then the turn is each of their tricks, which is basically Angers goes to find Nikolas Tesla or Nikolai Tesla, and who's played by David Bowie. And that's a great, those scenes are awesome, mm-hmm. By the way.
And that's a real person, too.
Yes, mm-hmm. Nikola Tesla was, at that time, in a fight with Edison mm-hmm. over power, essentially, over electricity. And what's the best way to do it? Edison ended up winning because of all of his financial contributions, but most people have always said that had Tesla won, we would have a totally different world now because of DC power as opposed to AC. But anyway, so Angers goes and finds a way to use Tesla's technology to create this trick called the Transported Man. He had always been doing the trick, but he figured out a way to do it with an imposter taking his place. Well, when Borden found that out, he essentially sets him up, ends up taking the trick away from him and doing a transported man trick that's even better. So he has to go for Tesla. And when he comes back, he's got this extravagant electrical creation that even blows Borden away. And Borden can't figure out how he does it. And it becomes a big deal and a big rivalry between them. And then the last act of the movie is the prestige, which is when all of this is revealed. And the two big twists in it are, in order to achieve the trick, Borden has had a twin his entire life that he's kept hidden. And each of them have played their roles. So that's the way he's able to do the trick, which is ironically exactly what Michael Caine's character Cutter said at the very beginning. He said, he's got an imposter. He's got a twin. And Angier said, no, he doesn't. He doesn't. But yeah, he did.
Yeah. I love that bit of foreshadowing.
Yeah. So much so that he changed his entire life. Each of the brothers had to change their entire life. And one of them even sacrifices his life to keep the trick. And then it's revealed that Frangier, in his Tesla trick, that he actually creates a double every single time he does the trick. And then he kills the double and reveals himself. That's how the trick is done. And they end up in tragedy. Borden ends up killing Angier. One of the brothers ends up dying. And then he goes off with his daughter at the very end of it, in a very big twist, epilogue kind of thing. Again, with voiceover from Cutter, who is Michael Caine, which is basically saying, you could try to figure out the trick, but you don't really want to. Which I thought was really interesting ending and compelling kind of thing is, you know, we want to try to figure out the magic trick, but we don't really, because we want to believe that there's really magic.
And that...
Does that make sense?
Absolutely. It's what we've discussed before, actually, if you want to go that route. We don't want to... We want to be plunged into the world. We want to figure things out ourselves. We don't want to be told what is happening in a movie,
right,
in a book, what have you. And it's the same,
right,
premise to me.
I think that's totally true. And it's the same thing. It's like also we... You know, we want to know how the makeup is done for an effect, but we don't really, because it kind of, not that it destroys the effect, but it makes us not appreciate it as much.
I knew that Tom Savini would work well with this.
See, there you go.
That's funny.
So you said you liked it, were there elements that you really, really liked before we get into, like, cast and details and all that?
Well, I had read history or background on the fact that the script is set up, like you just said, in three acts, that are the three acts of a magician's performance or act.
Mm-hmm.
And I had not realized that, I guess, the first time that I watched it. So watching it from a writing standpoint is a marvel in itself, structurally.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of fun for me. I like Bale and Michael Caine a lot. Hugh Jackman comes and goes for me. Sometimes I don't like him. And I like Scarlett Johansson, but her role's kind of small.
Uh-huh.
It was Bowie that made the movie for me. I'm a huge Bowie fan, and the fact that, you know, Nolan had to campaign and basically had to fly to Bowie to talk him into doing it, because he turned it down originally.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great, and it's kind of bittersweet, too, because, you know, he died a couple of years ago. I'm a big fan, and to see him, you know, it's just kind of sad a little bit. I mean, he's a triple threat or whatever it is they call it. You know, he can sing, he can act, he can, I guess, dance or whatever. He was one of the highlights for me in the movie. And it's really cool that they cast him in a very enigmatic role that was, you know, because he is a very enigmatic persona himself. So it was like, mm-hmm, really good casting, because they put him in a role that should be mysterious. So.
Yes, mm-hmm, definitely. I agree. Mm-hmm.
So back to the writing, you said?
I was going to say on your writing thing, mm-hmm, you know, this is definitely a Nolan Brothers movie. You know, we've talked before when we did Matrix and everything else about the Wachowskis and their style and everything else. We haven't done really a big Marvel one yet, but, you know, the Russo brothers are two other brother teams that work well together in creating their visions of their worlds. The Duffers for Stranger Things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Nolans are the same way, and there's this constant thematics that run through all of their movies, whether it's, you know, Inception or Westworld, Dark Knight, any of that, which is this whole the duality thing. Duality and what is real and what isn't is are big thematics in all their movies. The duality in this one is, you know, who's good and who's evil, and you get to see that in both of these characters. There are times when you say, oh, you know, when he's, you know, picking up and hugging his daughter and kissing his wife, and you're thinking Borden is a good guy, but oh my God, he's ruthless.
Mm-hmm.
He'll do all this stuff, so he's evil as well. And Angier's the same way. Oh, he loves her and he's taking care, but oh my gosh, he'll do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So based on their obsessions, You know, they each show that duality of good and evil, and you can't really judge them. Same thing with Cutter, really. You can't really judge him. He's aware of both of these magicians all the way through their career, and probably is aware of their secrets, but doesn't tell anybody about it and doesn't judge them. Just tells them, you know, you're making a mistake. I'll advise you, but, you know, you're doing your own thing. So I think that's in there. I like the thematics in the writing. I love the thematics of all of the secrecy and keeping secrets. And I mean, what is it? Borden's got that great line about telling the trick or whatever. Oh, what is that line? You know, the one where he's talking to his daughter, I think. And he says, the trick isn't anything. What you do with it or how you present it or how you show the trick is everything. No, the secret. It's the secret.
It's how you present it. Because he says,
yeah, and the fact that you never want to give away your secret, because once your secret is out, it's not a trick anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And the magic's gone. You know, it's just kind of interesting because it takes until the very last, you know, 5 minutes of the movie for them to reveal their secrets,
mm-hmm.
kind of thing, which is great. And then also sacrifice, all what they each do to become the best in their opinion. And then how it just destroys their lives. It's almost like a, you know, a Macbeth kind of thing of that obsession and wanting to be the best.
God damn you, you stole my key.
Oh, damn you.
I didn't have many.
Oh, but that's a good one. You know, yeah.
It's blind ambition, you know. And mm-hmm. what ambition drives people.
Yeah, yeah, I have thought about the ambition too. Angle. But yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that...
And it ultimately ends in tragedy, just like Macbeth, with, you know, the deaths.
Definitely.
The deaths of major players. I don't have a lot of casting. I know I normally do, but I'm thinking that the Nolans pretty much had everybody they wanted without, or either that or there's just no casting news out there. As far as background, it is based on a book by Christopher Priest.
Mm-hmm. I did hear that.
Yeah. And
yes.
Priest... said they only changed two things. One had something to do with spirituality. I can't remember what the other was. And he said what they made it was brilliant. He said that he actually wished he'd have thought of some of the things they did with it. So, author approval from Mr. Priest there on the Nolan collaboration.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I had read somewhere where the book itself has a little bit more of the supernatural in it, or something like mm-hmm. mystical spiritualism, that sort of thing.
Right,
in it.
Right.
So, yeah. But casting wise, so most of this cast was handpicked and said yes. I guess.
Well, I'm thinking that Christian Bale and I keep wanting to call him Alfred, Michael Caine, were probably dead on to begin with, because they had already collaborated with the brothers.
Yeah, for Dark Knight.
Right.
Yeah. Well, Dark Knight, I don't think was... When was Dark Knight out? I think it was out after this. I think this was after Batman Returns.
Right, it was in between the first two. Correct.
Okay, that makes sense.
And then the only... I mean, I like I said, I love Scarlett Johansson, but I don't think they used her that much. Bowie blew me away, but I also love that Andy Serkis was in it as well.
Yes, yes, Gollum.
Yeah, I mean, so there's a casting key, if you will, because he's known for several iconic genre films, I guess I should say.
Oh, yeah.
Including, you know, Planet of the Apes and Lord of the Rings. And I don't know.
Well, and he's Ulysses Clue in the Marvel world. He's the one in Black Panther, and he's the one in Avengers.
Right, right.
So, yeah. And the whole cast is great, though. I mean, I like all the women in it. Scarlett Johansson, of course, is beautiful. But Piper Perabo is great. Rebecca Hall is great. All the three of the women in their lives...
Now,
are portrayed really well.
Just out of curiosity, do you know those other two women from anything? Because I do not.
I knew Piper Perabo because she had done television. I'm trying to remember what I saw her in, but I think the first thing I saw her in was Coyote Ugly. But then she went on.
Oh my God, that's a long time ago.
What was the? Covert Affairs. Do you remember that series?
Nah.
I think it was a USA series.
Nah.
But she was really good in it. It was almost like a La Femme Nikita kind of thing. And she's the lead in it. So she was great. That's what I remembered her from. Now, Rebecca Hall, I had not recognized. I mean, I recognized her, but I couldn't place her mm-hmm. in anything. And I can't remember anything I really have seen her in. But I thought she was great in this.
I really love how they did her suicide scene.
Yes. I mean,
the way it's set up, you know she's going to do it before she even does it.
And I had read in looking at the trivia and stuff for this that her line was actually improv and they kept it. The line about, I know, or I know your secret, or whatever, that wasn't scripted, that was actually her line when the day they filmed it and they kept it.
That's good.
So I thought that was great.
I love when that happens.
But yeah, she was really good. And I also like, you know, one of a key for me, which was kind of cool, is Daniel Davis, who plays the judge, the one that he's the judge over Borden's trial, and then he demands to see the tricks. And that's the one that Angier takes to look at the water tank and everything else. And when I watched it again this time, I was looking at him going, where have I seen him before? I did, and looked him up, and he his big claim to fame was he was the guy who owned the house on The Nanny. You know, the sitcom with what's her name with the accent? I can't remember her name.
He was the lead man?
Yeah.
I didn't even recognize him.
He was but I recognized him mostly because he was Moriarty on Next Generation. He was the Moriarty character that Data brings to life through the holodeck in Next Generation. He was in like 3 episodes, I think, of Next Generation. So that's how I knew him. That's kind of geek fandom. But he was really good in it, too.
Wait. I know who you're saying now. I thought you meant he was the lead on The Nanny, but he was actually like the butler on The Nanny.
The butler?
Yeah.
The butler or somebody else. Yeah.
It's too bad Dennis didn't watch it with me because he's a big Nanny fan. But now that I look at him, I see who you're talking about. Daniel Davis.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we talked about writing. We talked about casting. I like that. Writing especially. It's hard to do a Nolan movie without the writing being, you know, always, it's almost good and bad. Sometimes it takes me out of their movies. It really did in Inception, and it really did in Interstellar. Because suddenly they'll have a great line or a great moment or a great scene, and I'm suddenly, boom, in the analytical side of, wow, that was so well written. And instead of, you know, it kind of takes me out of the movie a little bit because they're so good at it.
Uh-huh.
But I think overall the way the shot, I mean, I love the art direction in this movie. I like the way it's shot. I like the way they do the tricks and reveal the tricks without making a deal about it. Like when they first reveal the bird trick, which is the pre-trial version of the transported man, making a bird disappear and then making it reappear. And basically what you're doing is you're killing a bird and you have a duplicate bird.
Uh-huh.
But the way they show that with him just, you know, pulling up the table and taking the cage and dumping the bird's body. And he turns to the other bird and goes, you're the lucky one today. You know, and I was going, just those little things like that. The way they show the magic that they do show is really cool.
Uh-huh.
Did you think the Tesla thing was far off? Did you think it was far-fetched or out of the blue or too science fiction-y silly?
No. I know that what's his face? Roger Ebert said that the ending was a cheat. And I was like, no, I don't think so. It's just you didn't know that it was going into that science fiction direction. I like the sense of mystery that Tesla brings. I like the fact that it's a little grounded in reality because it's based on a real person that actually has a car named after him right now.
yes.
Yeah, I mean.
And who did revolutionize electricity. If he had not been doing what he's doing, Edison wouldn't have been pushed to do what he did.
Mm-hmm.
if their competition hadn't happened. It's interesting that the Nolans only kind of hinted at that. They didn't really play that up as much, because I thought that would have been a cool subplot, mm-hmm. almost, of Edison and Tesla's competition to be the best at the same time these magicians were trying to be the best.
Oh, might have been shut a cool up, David. You know they're going to be making a movie about it any time now. I mean, I'm serious.
Ironically?
I'm sure there are. Are they?
Ironically? That was going to be my biggest key, which is Christian Bale is about to do a movie where he plays Tesla.
Oh, okay. Well, I had a feeling that maybe that would be in development eventually because of, you know, other movies about inventors. You know, it's just...
Yeah, it's supposed to be coming out this year, I think, and he plays Tesla in it, which I thought would be really cool.
Mm-hmm. But back to your question about whether I thought it was a stark, a stark left turn.
Was it a twist?
Yeah.
I
love that it's all about magic and all about tricks, which is magic. But then Angier wants to take it further into what I guess you could consider real magic, but his choice is to turn to science, because technically, you know, Tesla would be more known as a scientist or, you know, an inventor.
Mm-hmm.
And so, mm-hmm. you know, it gives you the whole question of what really is magic. I mean, that's just a whole other layer to the story or to the concept alone. You know, what is magic?
Yes.
Is it a trick? Is it supernatural? Is it science? You know, there's many different answers. Or is it a combination of the three? And in some cases in this movie, it is.
Yes.
So, no, I didn't mind that introduction at all. And having David Bowie played it sealed the deal right there.
Did you... Another big thing that the Nolans always do and love and all of that is time. Did you, were you confused at all by the time cuts? By the fact that we're looking at different periods of time all the way through the movie?
A little bit. The first one, you know, obviously is a major one because it's pretty much the end of the movie at the beginning. But you know I'm a sucker for mm-hmm. I'm a sucker for a nonlinear timeline.
Right.
So, I didn't let it bother me, but sometimes I was second guessing myself a little bit, like, wait, when did this happen? And when did he go to America? Like that was a little confusing to me at times.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. But I thought they did it really well. I actually looked up the trivia. They said there are 146 time jump cuts mm-hmm. in this movie. So I thought that was pretty interesting. It did take me a little bit. It took me probably the first, like, 15, 20 minutes to go, oh, okay, now I get it. But at first I was going, wait, when was the trial? Because he was talking at the trial, and then we're back in time, and now to realize that there was more than two. It wasn't just a flashback, and then we're going to do a linear story. It was, we're going to constantly jump back and forth, which I think helps with that whole mystery thing too.
It does. And I also like that when you see, you know, the beginning is the shot of Hugh Jackman drowning in the tank, but then I like when they revisit it later in the film, you get it from Borden's perspective, so it's at least a different mm-hmm. perspective. You know, you see a little bit more of what really happened,
right,
in regard,
and the fact that each of them, when each of those, as the times start to diverge, you know, to converge more, you find out about, you get to find out a little bit more about how the trick is done, or the obsessions that they've gone to, the extent they've gone to.
Mm-hmm. It's also a great way to start a movie, you know, somebody drowning, and you seeing it from behind
the glass.
I mean, it's very startling.
Well, and I've got in my notes my favorite line is, are you watching closely? Which I think is the first line in the movie.
I think so. It's Michael Caine, isn't it? Narrating?
Yeah. And that's, you know, basically what the Nolan brothers are saying too. You know, watch. You got to watch and pay attention, because we're going to mess you up.
We're going to mess with your head, man.
Mess with your head. What about keys? You said you didn't have a lot of keys, but do you have some?
I do. When I was young, probably like most boys, I had a little obsession with magic. I had a little magic set, and I also used to read. I think it was Childcraft Encyclopedia, and I would read about Houdini, who was dead. But at some time, it was like, you know, in 1979, they were going to open his vault and reveal his secrets.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever. I can't remember what happened with that. But I think I read that. I want to say it was in a Childcraft. But so one of my big keys would actually be the movie Houdini with Tony Curtis.
Yes.
From 1953.
Tony Curtis.
Yeah. And Janet Leigh, who has also been in what?
Yes.
Psycho. Which we did earlier this year. So a big magic movie for me would have been Houdini.
Well, one of the things I noticed this one that I like, yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I had that in my keys too, because I love that movie too. Mm-hmm. That's it's a great older film for those of you in the millennial generation. Go back and watch that. It's a really good film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and his obsession with the occult and getting in touch with his mother and all of that and seances.
Well, and for those of you out there that don't know, he is also, he and Janet Leigh, who are in that movie, are the father of Jamie Lee Curtis from Halloween. So there's you a little bit of a key there. Somewhat incestuous key, I guess you would say.
Well, I liked watching this again. I liked it's like the second or third scene. It's the first time they show the trick and of the water tank. And they Borden is the shill, so he's the plant in the audience. And comes up like he's just this innocent guy who's just there to check on the trick and tie up the girl. But really, he ties her with a special knot that she can get out of. I even love that first scene because as it shows Michael Caine in the wings, right before they get ready to do the trick, he reaches over and grabs an axe.
Right.
And then when the curtain goes up and she's revealed, he puts the axe down. And you just go, why did he do? Oh, and then you note in the next scene, you learn the fact that he doesn't even trust the trick. And he helped design it. But he knows how dangerous it can be.
And that leads me to a question. When the trick goes awry and you do have to use the axe, why do you always swing it right at the person's face?
Yeah. True.
Because
seems
that
like
made
come
me
in on the
squirm.
Side or something.
I mean, that made me squirm more than anything in the movie, I think, is when that axe kept going to the glass and at the person's face behind it. I was like, couldn't you swing a little lower?
Well, now, and it was naturally dramatic effect because in that, you know, my logic side says, you know, at that time frame, glass was not shatterproof like that. So the first axe would have cut right through the glass. You wouldn't have cracked it and done all of that kind of stuff.
Right, right.
Like safety glass. It looked like safety glass. But I thought the same thing when I watched Houdini the first time of, okay, it seems like I would be cut to shreds by the glass pouring out of that more than I would have drowning, you know?
Yeah.
But I thought that was a great scene. And that's a good key, Houdini in general.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that that water torture trick, what they used to call the water torture trick, was what they opened the movie with.
Mm-hmm.
I had one for you. What was my other key that I had first? I had Houdini, too. I also had Greatest Showman because it came out last year, and, you know, Hugh Jackman is the Greatest Showman in it, and he's got that same kind of persona as Angier of I want it all and everything, even though it's a musical. But he's got that showman flair even in this.
You kind of shocked me because the whole time I was thinking of Houdini, that was one of my mother's movies. My mother was a big movie lover, and that's how I'm a big movie lover, because I used to watch stuff with her, and she loved Houdini, and she also loved a movie called The Greatest Show on Earth with Charlton Heston about Ringling Brothers.
Oh, I did too.
And when you started to say The Greatest Showman, I thought you were going to say The Greatest Show on Earth, which I was like, wow, we are on the same wavelength here, but no. Anyway.
I do love that movie.
Mm.
And that's great. And it also has Buttons, the clown, in it, which has led to my fear of clowns, was Buttons, because remember in Greatest Show on Earth, he was the clown but never took his makeup off, even when they were not in show.
He was played by somebody famous, too. I can't remember who played him.
He was played by Jimmy Stewart.
Right. That's right.
And you find out near the end of it that the reason he ever took his makeup off is because he was an escaped convict. He was accused, wrongfully, of course.
Right.
But he was accused of being a doctor who killed his wife. Oh, and that's why he hides behind his makeup. Yeah. And I said, see, that's where my fear of clowns started. Was a clown can hide anything behind that makeup. You know. Of course, Stephen King didn't help with Pennywise, but there you go.
That just cracked me up. Yeah, you can't have Jimmy Stewart cast in a negative light. It's just almost like Tom Hanks. He is like the predecessor to Tom Hanks, who is his successor.
Oh yeah, definitely.
It's like they're too good, they cannot do wrong. Anyway, that was a digression, but that was a good digression, because I haven't thought about that movie in a long time. And if you like circuses,
yeah,
and you've got an interest in Ringling Brothers, that's a movie to watch too, probably from around the same time period, in the 50s, I would say.
Yeah, I think it was 52. Was Greatest Show, mm-hmm. And
Houdini and was 53. Yeah.
But when you watch it, you know, it's gonna throw you off on clowns and on trapezes.
Mm-hmm.
Just letting you know.
Yep.
Just warning you know. I have that. It's interesting because this falls into that line where in the same year, two movies almost identical come out, or not identical, but the same genre come out.
Yes.
And when this came out in 2006, so did The Illusionist, which was another movie about magicians and trying to create the perfect magic trick and all that.
Wasn't that Edward Norton?
And
that's why time. I wasn't sure if I had seen this movie or not. I got them both confused, and then I was like, well, I don't think I've seen either one of them. And then when I watched it, I realized, mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I did watch this. So that added to my confusion.
Yeah, I mean, it's more of a social story. It's more of a, you know, love story, really. But it still has some really cool effects in it and has a lot of magic and the obsession over magic and keeping the secrets and keeping the tricks and all that. So it was good. What else? What do you have?
Well, I already mentioned Macbeth, you know, and the blind ambition and how it leads ultimately to tragedy. So I would almost say this movie, and this is a vague key, but elements of this movie remind me of Hitchcock because of the twists, and elements of it remind me of Shakespeare because of the tragedy and the, like I said, mm-hmm. ambition. So I would say Hitchcock and Shakespeare both played a part in the narrative, I guess, of the film.
Mm-hmm.
More than, I mean, like if you're looking for historical context, I would say there's elements of mm-hmm. both those major players in this movie.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I think the Macbeth angle is a really good one. It's interesting, you do the old and I do the new. I have a modern reference, which is, well, pseudo-modern, which is Now You See Me, the other magician movie where this, where the guy you don't know, the unseen, like Charlie to the Angels guy, assembles a team of magicians and wants them to start robbing banks.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
You got to watch. It's really, really good. It's called Now You See Me, and they actually did a sequel to it, which is, it's okay, but not great. But Now You See Me is really, really good. Great cast. And really good story all the way through. And it has twists and turns, and it has a lot of magic that they do right in front of you, and you're going, how did they do that? And it's really well done. Mark Ruffalo's in it, Woody Harrelson, really good-looking girl, I can't remember her name, but she's really good in it as one the only female magician.
I don't know anything about that.
Recommend. You want a fun ride? And I think Dennis would like it as well. It's a really good magician movie.
Okay.
But basically, you know, and Morgan Freeman is in it. But it's basically twist after twist after twist. So if you want a really good plot twist movie, that's a good one. And that was a key for me. for it. I saw in trivia a key, or not really a key, but it's kind of a cool trivia thing, which is Hugh Jackman's name, Alfred Borden Robert Angier, is Abra, which is the start of Abracadabra.
Right, yeah.
Which I wonder if they
did intentionally. I read that somewhere, too.
Or not.
Mm-hmm. That would be a question for Mr. Priest, because I'm assuming they're the same names in the novel.
I assume.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the only other real key I had was magic, because it just reminded me of magic. It was a magician again, an obsessed magician, although he's schizophrenic in that one, and this one is more of a, you know, I'll do anything for my craft kind of thing. But for some reason, I just kept thinking of Anthony Hopkins and magic while I was watching this. Maybe it's just a magician thing.
Maybe he's just a creep factor, because that movie got in my subconscious and never left.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, that's just a really creepy movie. We should probably revisit it, because I have not seen it probably since that decade. It's been a long time since I saw that movie.
I haven't either. That would be a fun one to do, because that's Angie Dickinson, Anthony Hopkins. I mean, it's a Burgess Meredith. I remember
Burgess. I don't remember poster. Angie. And didn't William Goldman write the script? I think he did.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, which means it's going to be brilliantly written.
Right. I mean, he did Misery, for those of you that don't remember, a few weeks back. Same writer. I have a couple of other keys. They're throwaways, kind of.
Sure.
One is that this movie is cast with superheroes. Hugh Jackman is Wolverine.
Yep.
What's his name? Christian Bale is Batman, and Scarlett Johansson is Black Widow, and not to mention Alfred the Butler is in it as well. So there is a huge superhero element to this movie, key-wise, in casting.
And Andy Serkis is from Marvel Universe,
right.
And David Bowie was just always a superhero. It didn't matter. I think he was just visiting our planet anyway.
Right.
So
I mean, he got cast as a vampire, which was appropriate. He could have been cast as a superhero if he was still around.
Yeah.
And then my other one, and you're going to like this, is the whole sci-fi Tesla element reminds me of Cronenberg's Fly movie. With the transporter,
and also the obsession. Yeah,
mm-hmm. I mean, it's not moving a person from one transporter to another, but it is duplicating somebody or cloning somebody. And I think it even had that blue lightning effect at one point, maybe in the 1986 version of The Fly.
That's a great one, because even the original, you know, both of them, the original and the remake, were about trying to create teleportation, trying to move one thing from one to the other. It's just that a fly gets in the way.
Right.
Kind of thing. That's really cool, Tim. I hadn't thought of that. That's a great key.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the one I'll end it with, because I have no more.
My last one was just a key back to the Nolans, which was Memento, which is one of their first movies together.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, again, deals with time, deals with a science fiction-y element, because we don't really know what's creating this and what's causing this guy to do this, and has twists all the way through it. So it reminded me of their other works as well as a key.
Yeah, I saw that when it came out, and I haven't seen it since, but I do remember it being kind of a mindfuck movie.
Oh, yeah. All of theirs are, really. Everything they've done, Inception, Memento, Westworld, everything that the Nolans touch has this, you know, I think the only mainstream really is the Batman trilogy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because it's told almost linearly.
Have you seen Inception?
Yes.
Because I get it confused with Interstellar. I've seen Inception, but I've not seen Interstellar. Inception, I remember really, really liking. I just can't remember what it's about at all. I know that's terrible.
Inception is about the guys that do dream warfare. They're able to go into somebody's dreams and extract information from them.
Yeah, we need that on our list too, because I know that I ended up really liking that movie.
And it has a very, very typical Nolan ending, just like this one, of, are you really sure how it ended? And are you really sure how what we meant when we ended it that way? Because it ends with the top spinning, mm-hmm. you know, in Inception. And then and see, and I liked Inception a lot, but I am one of those that did not like Interstellar. I did not like
Interstellar okay. at all. Well, and I haven't seen it, so I couldn't say anything really.
Well,
but
it's literally Interstellar. You're going into a black hole and see what's on the other side. So.
Well, speaking of great movies, we can congratulate each other yet again for choosing a movie mm-hmm. that is on the 1001 movies to see before you die, because The Prestige
there
is on that list.
Really?
It is. It is.
I did not know that. That is awesome.
Yeah. That's the only award I really have as far as winning any awards. That was the one that stuck out.
It has Scarlett Johansson as a magician's assistant, so it has to be in the top, you know, 100 movies.
Okay. I think she's better as Black Widow, but that's okay. I would assume you wouldn't mind seeing her in a cat suit.
Nope, not at all. No problem at all.
Any final thoughts about it?
I think, again, this is another one that we both, I think, agree on. We both want to highly recommend. I do think it falls into the science fiction category, although people sometimes challenge that. I do think that it is extremely well acted, well written, well directed. And it's a fun ride. If you like a movie that twists and turns all the way through it, and you have to kind of pay attention and catch up, this is a good one. It's not one to put on while you're cooking dinner or, you know, while you have friends over and you're all talking and just kind of glancing at it, because the Nolan movies require you to think through them.
Yeah, you definitely need to pay attention.
Any final thoughts from you?
I highly recommend it. For Bowie, because it's one of his last performances. If any of you are not familiar with other things he did, he obviously was a huge pop star since the late 60s, but he started his film career, I believe, with Nicholas Roeg's The Man Who Fell to Earth around 1976. But he also went on to do such horror classics as, what's that? Lesbian vampire one you like so much? The Hunger. Yeah, he was a vampire in it. He was in Jim Henson's Labyrinth as the Goblin King. He's always played really almost as iconic a role as the role he played as himself in his career as a musician.
Yeah.
He was a chameleon, if anything. And he's very good in this. He has dark hair and a mustache, so it's not like he's, you know, playing off his David Bowie looks at all.
No, he looks like Tesla.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
with a really odd accent. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So.
And if you look at stuff from Tesla, supposedly he did have an odd accent. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't remember his. I think he was definitely Slavic, but I can't remember where he's from,
mm-hmm.
like Lithuania or somewhere. But anyway. Cool. So go out, rent The Prestige, watch it, enjoy it, and then come back and let us know what you thought of it. If you agree with us, if you don't, make sure you like us and review us and click on those stars down below or wherever. And Tim, I'll talk at you next week when we'll cover probably some scary thing, I would assume.
All right. That sounds like a plan. I will be there.
All right. Talk to you then.
All righty. Bye.